I'm trying to elevate small talk to medium talk.
Hi, I'm Alexander Justin, and Ob, there will be no slamming, no bamming, and no thanking your podcast co-host.
And I'm Ob Sinensky, and Alex, maybe if you were a little bit of a bigger celebrity, you would have had a chance.
Welcome back to Pretty, Pretty, Pretty Good, a Curb Your Enthusiasm podcast. Today we are here to discuss Season 5, Episode 7, The Ski Lift, which originally aired on November 20th, 2005. Last week it was Passover in Curb, which means it was April, and this week it's ski season for some reason. So,
well, we're going to talk about what time of year it is in this episode, because okay. It doesn't completely add up.
Yeah, but the narrative of the story has to be sequential because, you know, like for example, like they're talking about Richard Lewis's illness, so it in theory it should be a week after Passover. So
yeah, in theory, in Los Angeles, it shouldn't be skiing weather and baseball weather at the same time. But, you know, we'll get into
that. Yes. Okay. All right. Let's jump right into the recap.
Larry is visiting with Richard. He's seeing what's good latest with the kidney and how he's doing. And Richard is like, he's lost all hope. He's desperately begging Larry for a kidney. Larry's like, well, you know, what's going on with Lewis? You know, hopefully he'll come through. And Richard's like, come on, like, you know, look, I have this Mickey Mantle ball. You know, look what happened to the Mick. They gave him a liver right away. It wasn't a problem. And Larry's like, yeah, well, you know, maybe if you were a little bit of a bigger celebrity, you know, things would be a little bit different. And Richard says, you know, speaking of the ball, you know, I have this Mickey Mantle ball, the ball that he hit for his 500th home run, and I'm leaving it to you in my will, and it's going to be yours one day. And Larry's very excited. He does his Mickey Mantle rounding the bases routine that they both get a good kick out of.
I didn't get that, but maybe it was before my time.
Yeah, I'm not a huge Mickey Mantle
person. Larry's really being an asshole this whole scene. Like, Richard tells him he looks healthy, and Larry says, yeah, well, I took care of myself. I wasn't an alcoholic or a drug addict. So, they're friends.
Yeah, he's rubbing it in.
Yeah. By the way, why does Richard Lewis – okay, so he has the Mickey Mantle baseball. That's fine. He also has a signed Ohio State football next to his bed. And even if he were to have acquired a football from Ohio State signed by – I don't know who signed that at some point. It doesn't seem like the kind of thing that would be so beloved that he'd keep it on his bedside table. Right? Does he strike you as a big Ohio State football fan?
No, not necessarily. But, you know, I guess, you know, if he has a personal relationship or connection to someone that got it for him, maybe, you know, it's still cool to have.
Yeah, there's also a big photo on his nightstand of Richard wearing a cowboy hat.
Oh, so he's just a front runner.
No, not a Dallas Cowboys hat. A cowboy hat.
Okay. Yeah. Like an actual cowboy hat.
An actual cowboy hat. And I would like to get some information on that as well.
Yeah, we should look at that. Yeah.
I do like when Jeff mentions the value of the baseball, the camera cuts to the very interested looking nurse, Lisa. But then when she goes to talk to Larry in the hall, the very first thing she brings up is the baseball, which is like kind of a curious thing to do if you're planning on stealing it. Like you wouldn't really want to draw extra attention, right?
Yeah, well, she's not necessarily the smartest.
Yeah, and all right, it could just mean to establish that she's interested in it, but she hasn't yet come up with the wide vagina theft scheme. So maybe she doesn't realize she's a wide vagina until Larry tells her. Is that possible?
Or it's possible that she doesn't have a wide vagina at all.
Well, she's storing a lot of stuff in there. So.
Well, you know, the vagina has been known to expand to accommodate, you know, large items to pass through it when necessary.
Okay, how large? Just depends on
A baby's head.
Oh, okay, fine. True point. Excellent point.
So, you know, Larry heads out, but before he does, Richard makes sure that Larry understands that, you know, if Lewis stays in his coma, I'm really depending on you to come through for me, which is basically the last thing in the world that Larry wants to hear. As he heads out, he starts schmoozing with the nurse. They mentioned the baseball, as you said. She also mentions that she actually knows Larry's friend Jeff. They once dated. And Larry's like, oh, that's interesting. Like, how, you know, how are things? And she gives a completely socially unacceptable response, which is to say, things were good until, you know, it became intimate. Lyra's like, oh, yeah, I know. My man Jeff, he's a little slam bam thank you ma'am. Is that what you mean? She's like, no, actually, no slam, no bam, no thank you ma'am. He was actually a bit short-lived, if you know what I mean. And she makes the universal finger gesture for small penis.
Yeah, it's really kind of crazy how she starts by saying there was no hanky-panky. Or if there is, she's not going to talk about it because she's not that kind of a gal. And then moments later, as you said, she's giving like extremely private and specific details. And, you know, I don't know. It's a very, very rapid turn she has.
Yeah, I mean, like, this a conversation like this has never happened in the history of the world. Yeah. Where someone meets somebody and is like, oh, I know your friend Jeff. He has a small penis. Yeah.
Well, look, Larry asked her if it was slam bam, thank you, ma'am. And she's not in the mood for details. You listen to me. I want details and I want them right now. I have a podcast. I have no place to go. You're not in the mood. Well, you get in the mood.
You get
and
in the
so,
mood.
Yeah, details. Yeah, she really does. Yeah. I mean, to answer, Lisa actually asked the question, or excuse me, Larry sort of acts surprised at Lisa's behavior. And Lisa asked the question, you know, and I'll ask you all, do men not sit around and talk about if they have tiny wieners?
Not typically. It's not something that usually gets volunteered at. Gathering sessions.
Yeah. What is Lisa's motivation, by the way? Like, is she hitting on Larry? Is she trying to get back at Jeff, who treated her poorly? A little bit of both.
But it doesn't sound like Jeff treated her poorly other than just having a small penis. Like it's one thing if Larry was correct and he was like, slam, bam, thank you, ma'am, and just like basically, you know, had sex with her and then like she never heard from him again. Like, that would be a reason to say, you know, this guy's an asshole who treated me poorly. But it sounds like he was a perfectly nice gentleman who just, you know, has a deficient penis, which, you know, what are you supposed to do?
Yeah, but, okay? But listen, so he has a small penis. We know Jeff. He's not a perfectly nice gentleman.
Right, but that's not her complaint.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just, you know, I'm going based on what she's saying. You know, she's saying everything was good except for the sex.
Yeah. I don't know. Tough out for Jeff here.
I remember watching this episode live because I had I was in law school at the time, and I had two friends of mine who you know, both of them, and we had just like in the week or weeks before invented like a character that we had seen, you know, in small doses around, which we call Too Much Information Guy, which was not the person who volunteers too much information.
The guy who
it's
says
the
that?
Guy who when somebody yeah. goes, ah, too much information. And like, so like we just like we started referring to this just like generic character, Too Much Information Guy. And then like we were all three of us were sitting watching this episode. And when she says this and Larry goes, too much information, we just started cracking up and pointing at the screen in unison. It was like amazing that Larry had manifested before our eyes as Too Much Information Guy.
This Lisa Larry conversation, which is in Richard Lewis's house, we see they're standing right outside the door of his bedroom, and there's a very large, prominent, traditional wood mezuzah on that door. And then as the camera sort of moves, you see it on the interior of other doors in the house, which, like, there's no way that would exist in Richard Lewis's house because, like, you know, a lot of Jews might have, like, a mezuzah on the front door, but they don't have mezuzahs on every door of their house unless they're, like, quite Orthodox. So it led me to think, like, were they renting this house where they were filming from Orthodox Jews? And then if they were, which it seems to me they had to have been, then I wonder if that has sort of helped inspire the script, right? Like where the hell does Larry come up with the concept of Shkia Sachama? So my theory is that the owner of this house who rents them the house, they let him sort of stand in the back and watch as they're filming, you know, with his kippah. And so Larry turns to him at one point and says, hey, you know, give me some obscure Orthodox Jewish funny term that we can throw in here. That's sort of my theory of how this all came to happen.
That could be. Although we'll get into later some bad information that it seems this guy may have fed them about how Orthodox Judaism works.
Yeah, well, for sure. I mean, that leads to another thing, which, like, so I was watching this with my wife, and my wife gets annoyed by the things that aren't accurate. And it reminds me of a thing that our mutual friend Eitan used to say in high school, or at some point, like many years ago, which is a good point, which is like, our religion is filled with so many obscure and ridiculous and absurd rules. But because we just grow up with them, we just accept them as normal. So when we see on TV or in the media an inaccurate portrayal, we're like, oh, that's ridiculous. We don't do that. And it's like, yeah, but we do 1,000 other things that are like even more weird. So it's like the thing that they got wrong is weird to us because we don't do it. But it's not any more weird than the things we actually do, right?
We do a lot of very weird
things. So like
things.
For as a big example, which I'm sure you're going to mention, like the daughter has her hair covered the entire episode. Like,
right.
Non-married
exactly.
women don't cover their hair. Only married women
correct.
Do. To us, that's absurd. But like, if somebody pointed that out to Larry or the people while they were filming the episode, I'm sure what the person's what they said to the Orthodox Jew telling them that is, "Shut up, we don't care. This is what makes people think that you're Orthodox." So it's like, you know,
right? They're trying to create authenticity through specificity, even if it's not
actually
exactly authentic. Yeah. It's like, yeah, I mean, and I mean, I'm sure that there are many, many things that I've seen on TV where they portray, you know, some sort of Muslim or Christian or some other religious thing that I'm like, yeah, that seems authentic. Like, that looks like the type of thing I would expect that to have. And like, someone who's actually very familiar with all the intricacies of a religion would say, no, that's not actually how that would ever work.
Yeah.
But like, for TV, it's good
enough. And not just with religion, you know, like Bill Simmons always
with anything.
Bill Simmons always complains in sports how they need like a person who knows about sports to correct like these obviously wrong things about TV shows and movies. But again, I think they do have somebody who knows about sports. And when they tell the director, hey, that's not accurate, the director says, I don't care. This is what a non-sports person thinks is a sports thing. So that's what we're doing here.
Yeah, that could be. That could definitely be part of it. Or it could just be they had someone who didn't know what they were talking about, who, you know, who was like nominally Orthodox and was the, you know, the person that they relied on. And he got some things right and some things wrong.
There's nobody who knows the term Shkia Sachama who thinks that non-married women cover their hair.
Yeah, that's probably true.
I mean, how many people do you know who even know the term Shkia Sacham? I don't think it's a common term among most Orthodox Jews.
Yeah, most Orthodox Jews would just say sunset.
There's no chance my wife has ever heard that term outside this episode of her.
Could be, yeah. Yeah, that's like a Talmudic term. Okay, so we head over to the hospital, and Jeff and Larry are sitting by Lewis's bedside, and you know, they're talking about how COBAs are unpredictable, and like, there's still hope. We don't really know what's going to happen here. Larry's like, by the way, I bumped into a friend of yours, tells him the whole thing about the interaction with the nurse and how she said Jeff has a small penis. Jeff's like, no, not true, and immediately says the real problem is that she has a gigantic vagina, and she's probably trying to nip that in the bud. Which itself is probably some sort of euphemism here for the situation.
Okay.
And like he makes what until now is not the universal symbol for, I believe, but has since become the universal symbol for a large vagina with the hands pressed together by the heels of the hands open wide.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing they probably coined that gesture.
Yeah. Yeah. The hand signal for small penis is rather well known, obviously. I refer to it as the half-inch salute when I used to salute one specific friend in high school with that. But I was going to ask, like, and I guess you just gave the answer, like, is the wide vagina hand signal, is that something that was invented by Curb, or was it something that was just popularized by Curb, sort of like shrinkage with Seinfeld?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've never seen it used outside, like, somebody who's, like, overtly referencing Curb.
Yeah. Now, I've never even been familiar with the concept of someone having an overly wide vagina, but I guess maybe I don't have enough vagina experience. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm guessing it's not a.
Isn't it a rather elastic muscle, as you said? It can sort of a.
We should probably shouldn't spend too much time opining on vaginas because what do we know? You know, I think from what I've seen, like the whole like small penis thing is also kind of a myth that it's like it really for like 99% of people fall into a fairly, you know, small range of penis size.
Yeah.
Obviously there's some outliers in both directions, but like most people have a reasonably similar sized penis is what I've
heard. Yeah. What I think is that if you're going around complaining about a woman's wide vagina, then you know, it is a cell phone, because I think in order for it to be so wide as for you to notice, you have to be lacking in some girth yourself. So I don't think Jeff should be. Although to be fair, Jeff wasn't publicizing this. Jeff was just responding to her accusation.
Yeah, my theory has always been that there's like really only two places that people regularly see other people's penises. Number one is in pornography, which is fake, and you know they can make anything look however they want. It's a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Number two is people see other men in like locker rooms and bathrooms sometimes, and that's where the shower versus grower phenomenon.
Yes.
Can come into effect. Like, you're not generally seeing other men's erect penises.
I was just
very often out of a sexual context.
I was just listening to a podcast with an African-American woman who was talking about how the grower versus shower is why there's the false perception that African-Americans are more well endowed.
Yeah, I've wondered about that.
And so, yeah.
I think we may have talked about that in it was an earlier episode where Larry's asking all the black women about whether it's true that black men have a larger.
Yeah, no. Well, this specific anecdote I just heard. So I hadn't heard it at the time that we had that episode with Wanda. But yes, okay. But it would have been relevant there, had I.
Yeah, so Jeff is like, you know, this is probably happens a lot. Guys get tagged with the small penis label when really the problem is big vagina. Mm-hmm. These big vagina ladies, they're just getting away with murder and something should be done.
Yes.
Very big problem. So, you know, the doctor comes in. He just wants to let Larry know that he's onto him. He knows exactly what Larry's doing, that he's waiting for Lewis to die so that he doesn't have to give the kidney to Richard Lewis. Larry is at first just like, what kind of a person would do that? Like, oh, you know, that's crazy. And the doctor says, I think you know exactly what type of person, Larry. And Larry finally owns up. He says, a person like me? All right, pretty good. You got me.
It's great. It reminds me of the time when he tries to skip the line in the bathroom by pretending to be – remember it? He gives it up so quickly.
Yeah, I mean, it's like at a certain point, like if somebody says like, literally, here's exactly what you're doing. I know this is what you're doing. Yeah. Like there's only so much you can wiggle out of that.
Yeah, I mean, so sometimes people are so committed to the lie. I'm thinking of another mutual friend of ours in high school who, when he was committed to a lie, he would go to his deathbed insisting it was true.
Yeah, there's also an element of here. It's like it's not like he's actually doing something wrong. I mean, it's like it's maybe like immoral to think this way, but it's not like he's actively participating in some scheme that the doctor has now blown up. It's like, okay, yeah, you got me. Like, I don't really care about this guy. I want updates on him because I hope he dies so I don't have to give my kidney away, which, you know, is not the nicest thing to vocalize out loud, but it's not a completely unreasonable thing for somebody to, like, kind of hope that I don't have to give away my kidney and this guy who's probably going to die, let's just have him die a little bit sooner so that way I'm off the hook.
Yeah, this evil man, apparently, who's going to die.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, while they're there, Jeff mentions to Larry, oh, you know, we have the ski lodge. Like, why don't you come with us? And Larry really doesn't want to because skiing is a whole schlep, which is correct.
Yeah. So you're anti-skiing.
Oh, yeah. I went skiing one time and it was the worst day.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's similar to the beach in a lot of ways. And that we get that very similar scene later where, like, Larry's trying to, like, balance all the gear as he walks, which is very similar to that scene where he goes to the beach.
Yeah, it's exactly the same.
All the beach supplies. Yeah. But yeah, that's, you know, I feel about the beach. It's like it's a schlep, and then you spend the entire day sopping wet, freezing cold, bruised, and it's just – that's not fun.
Yeah. Well, you should probably go skiing more than once if you – but yeah.
Yeah, I suppose if you get good at it, it could be fun. But, you know, I don't expect that I will ever try skiing again. And thankfully, I married someone who also has no interest – who also went skiing once, had a miserable experience, has no interest in going skiing. So, you know, if my kids want to be skiers, they'll have to figure it out when they're older.
Okay.
We're not going to be a skiing family. As they're, you know, walking out of the hospital, Larry spots George Lopez, who seemingly also had a kidney transplant recently. You know, they make some pleasantries, and George says that he's feeling great since he got the transplant. Says, you know, someone's really got to step up for Richard. I hear he really needs one, and he's at the bottom of the list for the transplant. And, you know, if you're at the bottom of the list, you're just completely fucked. But, you know, just so I, you know, you didn't hear this from me, but the guy in charge of the kidney consortium, this guy Ben Heineman, he's the type of guy that he could be convinced if you buddy up to him.
Yeah, puts his friends high on the list. Incredibly unethical. Quite a, I wouldn't say anti-Semitic, obviously, but a little bit anti-Orthodox. So there's bias here. But anyway.
Yeah.
So, in Orthodox, you would never do something like this.
No, of course not. No, there definitely wasn't an entire big expose about a bunch of rabbis who were involved in a scheme to, you know, I don't even know what they were doing. They were doing something with organ transplants that they got all busted for. The whole kidney transplant industry is, I think, has a lot of problems from what I've read that is in need of serious reform.
Yeah, but I listened to a Freakonomics podcast about it a few years ago.
Yeah, there's a lot of issues with it. But, you know, there's a lot of issues with a lot of things. So we head back home, and Larry's on the phone. He's talking to Mr. Jones, asking him to look into this Heineman character, see what he could find out about him, so that way he can buddy up. Cheryl's, you know, she's there. She's like, hey, I just got this winter coat for you, and, you know, maybe you could use it for the skiing trip. And Larry's like, no, we're not doing that. I like the coat, but we're not doing the skiing. Larry sees there's like a bag on the table, which he opens up and realizes that it's filled with edible undies. He figures, oh, it must be Mr. Jones. He must have left it here.
Yeah, well the weird thing is that Jones is talking to them in the kitchen, and then when they're done, they're like, all right, bye. And he just walks from the kitchen out of the house, which is like normally you escort a guest out of your house. Like, you know, you at least you show them to the door. You don't just stay in the kitchen and let them go find their way out. But
Generally speaking, yeah.
But that's what happens here. Yeah, he leaves his edible underwear.
The whole edible undies thing, I would say, like, that's like the one part of this episode that I'm like not that into because it's just like too silly.
But I mean, it leads to the incredible scene on the ski lift.
Yeah. I'll say that I don't necessarily love that payoff as much as other people.
Okay. I mean, we're skipping ahead a little bit, but the edible underwear, they seem to basically just be a fruit roll-up in the shape of...
Yeah, exactly. It's just it's a fruit roll-up, for lack of a better word. It's just sort of right in the shape.
I don't have enough familiarity with edible underwear.
I have no familiarity.
Yeah. Nor do I don't understand the appeal, really, because like it feels like it was just making sticky and dirty and unnecessary.
Yeah, just like... Yeah, I'm not going to even say it, but yeah, I don't see the need.
It's a very George... esque attempt to combine food and sex.
To combine, right? Yeah. So Larry's in his office. He's talking to Mr. Jones on the phone, and he's getting the whole scoop on Heidemann. He's a big Yankees fan. He's an Orthodox Jew, and he drives a gold Cadillac. And here's his license plate number, which is good job by Mr. Jones. He got him good info.
Yeah. First time we've actually seen him be good at his job or do anything actually. Right on the adoption stuff, he always just promises stuff is coming. Here we actually see some evidence.
Yeah. So Larry says that what his plan is going to be is that he has to figure out some way to somehow save his life, and then this guy Heidemann will be indebted to him, and then he could ask him to help out Richard Lewis. Like, for example, if Jeff were to, like, push him off the roof or something, and then Larry would somehow jump in and prevent it from happening, then he would be indebted to Larry. And Jeff's like, well, he might have something to say about the fat guy who tried to push him off the roof. And Larry's like, yeah, well, that's why it's not a good idea, but, like, something like that. And, we cut a little bit ahead, and we see they're in a parking lot, and they've spotted the car, and what appears to be their plan is that they're going to intentionally create an accident with their two cars. So first Larry drives into the car, and they get out, they inspect, but it looks like they barely even did anything. Like, this is useless.
Yeah. By the way, how do they know there's no camera in the parking lot? Which there usually is.
Yeah, well, maybe back then there wasn't as many, but yeah, no, this is – I mean, this plan happens to work out, but it's a very stupid plan.
Yeah.
That, like, to think that, like, oh, here, how am I going to become friends with this guy? I'm going to break his car.
Yeah.
Then he'll want to be my friend.
Yeah. I was in ShopRite in my neighborhood a few months ago. And I usually try and park not too close to everybody else so my car doesn't get smashed. But unfortunately, I came out and my car was smashed. And so I went inside to the security desk or whatever, or to the front desk, and I said, hey, listen, it appears as if somebody, bumped their cart into my car. Do you happen to have any, video evidence to see what's going on? And it turned out it wasn't like what I thought, which is somebody had just sort of pushed a cart into my car because they found it on the video. Someone had, with their car, smashed into a cart and knocked the cart into my car from their car. So so there is video.
Yeah.
And then I said, oh, great. Can I have this video? And they're like, no, we can only give it to the police. I have to file a police report.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was much more complicated than I was hoping it would be.
My wife had once had a car accident situation where she was like coming out of her office parking lot and like got sideswiped as she was like turning into the lane. And the police report originally like wrote it up as either her fault or like neither fault, just like both people did something wrong. And then she went to like the IT guy in their office and like found that there was cameras in the parking lot, and they were able to get like a perfect angle that showed exactly what happened, and she got it like reversed.
Much like her.
When you saw it on tape, it was like, oh, that guy clearly like didn't do the right. I don't remember exactly what happened, but like it was obvious that it was the other person's fault.
Yeah. Well, I went shopping also, I was very pleasantly surprised that there was a camera to immediately find my car.
Yeah. I guess that's one of the reasons why some people have those dash cabs, just in case.
Like everybody in Russia.
Like that. Yeah.
By the way, this is a common complaint on the show, but Larry, a famous celebrity, L.A., an extremely small town, yet Larry can pretend to be an Orthodox Jew, and Ben Heidemann, according to Larry's plan, will have no way of knowing that he's faking it.
Yeah, let's also say it's not as if he does the best Orthodox Jew impression that I've ever seen.
Yeah, a lot of mumbling.
Yes. Which I can see why that's why what it sounds like to somebody, but
yeah, to somebody who doesn't know the difference, but to somebody who does,
yeah,
well, like the daughter. Excuse me, what did you say?
Yeah, So he tries again, and this time he goes much harder. The airbag even comes out, and it works perfectly, and he leaves a note, and we fast forward to Izzy's deli, where Larry is going to get his opportunity to meet with Heidemann. So he's he dresses up as an extremely like nebbishy like Orthodox Jew.
Wait, hold on.
Like,
is it? It's Larry's normal outfit except for the yarmulke.
No, like I don't know.
Pants are hiked a little higher.
The pants and the button down shirt. It's just like is he wearing short sleeves?
Yeah.
It's just like very like classic like nerd. Miami Beach of the 1950s attire.
All the yarmulkes of the extras in the scene at the deli, by the way, are terribly fake.
Yeah.
Again, the yarmulkes were not chosen by someone who knows what kind of yarmulkes people wear in the circumstances. But anyway.
Yeah, so Larry explains, you know, what happened was, you know, I was listening to Jewish radio.
Of course.
And they were talking about Israel. Of course. And I got so worked up that I crashed. And, like, I didn't even know what happened before I could look. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the guy, you know, the guy's like, yeah, that's understandable. You know, he also gets worked up about Israel from Jewish radio from time to time as well. It's a very passionate subject for a lot of people.
I do like how they mix in some real Hebrew and Yiddish expressions along with all the random bullshit.
Larry, like, he fakes a phone call. He, as if somebody's calling him. He's like, oh, to the Yankee game? No, of course I can't go to the Yankee game. It's the Sabbath.
So who are the Yankees like, coming to play the Angels? Is that what we're led to believe?
That's what it sounded like. Okay. Now, again, you know, as I mentioned before, you know, we're supposed to believe that baseball season is in full swing while there's snow in Los Angeles.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, it has to be a week after Pesach or more or less. So it's April. So the baseball part makes sense. Right. I wonder. I don't know enough about skiing. There must be skiing not that far from LA that you can. You know, you fly. I'm sure it's an hour or two flight. I don't know. I don't know exactly where it is, but I'm sure somewhere in the mountains, in the Sierra Nevada, something.
Yeah, I mean, I think Lake Tahoe has skiing. I'm sure there are places where there is skiing. I just doubt that's the case in April.
Well, I don't know. You go up the mountain high enough. I don't know. Anyway, yeah.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. When I was in Colorado, I did like a cross-country road trip with some friends, and it was in the middle of the summer, and we went to like the highest point in Colorado. I think it's like the highest paved road in the United States, at the top of Mount Evans. And there was like straight up snow.
Yeah.
So I guess that's true that if you go high enough, you can always find snow.
I mean, last year, or I guess 2 years now at this point, I was in Israel for Passover and there was snow on the top of the Hermon and people were skiing there. So.
All right. So maybe we don't know what we're talking about. I'm not an expert on the weather. I know Jews control the weather, but not this Jew. I don't really know much. So Heidemann's like, wow, that's amazing. The two things in life I love are the Yankees and skiing. which, you know, Mr. Jones didn't get the skiing tip, so shame on him for that. That could have Larry could have came in with that plan already.
Yeah.
And Larry says he's so excited to hear that my yarmulke almost fell off. He says, you know, it's my favorite thing to do in life, and, you know, it just so happens to be that, you know, I'm going skiing this weekend with some friends. Why don't you come along?
Yeah.
So Larry heads now back to Richard Lewis's and
– Hold on. That's the end of our conversation?
Oh, okay.
Well, so Heidemann, for example, he says that, you know, he loves the Yankees so much that sometimes he even breaks the rules and watches their games on Shabbos.
Oh, that's true.
Which, by the way, nobody who looks like him, well, probably wouldn't do that. But
nobody would admit
that to a guy they just met who they think is, yeah. Also, by the way, most of the Velvet Yarmulke types, sort of the Ben Heidemann types, not big into skiing usually. But I guess there are some exceptions.
Yeah, you know, that's. I don't think we need to worry about that. But yeah, you wouldn't, like some other Orthodox person that you just met, you wouldn't tell them if you're observant that you break the Sabbath sometimes.
Yeah, that's a cardinal sin.
You put, you know, yeah, that's like a fifth date type of thing. You know, but then again, you probably also wouldn't tell somebody you just met that one of your mutual acquaintances has a small penis. Yeah. So. People are very forward with information.
People are escalating small talk to media talk all over the place.
Yeah. Okay, do you have anything more to say before we go ahead to the next
one? I give you permission to move
on. Okay. Excellent. Okay, so we go back to Richard's house, and Larry's chatting up the nurse again. It says, hey, just want to let you know, I saw Jeff, and I mentioned the whole small penis thing to him, and he seemed to think the problem was your big vagina. And she says, no, that's ridiculous. I have a regular-sized vagina. Larry's not convinced. He says, I think that you use the big vagina to prey on the small penis, and methinks the lady doth protest too much.
She does have the look of someone who would be too large down there. I don't know what that means, but
I don't know what that means either. So he heads in to see Richard, and he tells him the great news about the inroads he's making with the kidney guy. And he says, you know, it would be this mantle ball, like, I would love to have it, obviously, but an even better idea would be, like, let's just give it to this guy. And, you know, if that helps get you to the top of the list, then that'll be worth it. And Richard at first is resistant, but, you know, he relents and says, you know what, fine. Except as soon as they go to look for it, they see that it's missing. You know, they look on the floor, they look all around, it's nowhere to be found. And the only person who's been in the house other than Larry since the last time is the nurse.
Yeah, which I call bullshit on. Like, this house is spotless. You know, there's no cleaning person who's been there, no cook, nobody, only this nurse. But that's what Richard
maybe
says.
Maybe the nurse also has cleaning responsibilities.
I guess so, yeah. I don't know where she stores. Oh, I do know where she stores her cleaning supplies.
Yeah. So Larry starts questioning her about it. Like, have you seen the ball? Do you know anything about it? She's like, says, no, of course not. I don't know what you're talking about. And after a little back and forth, she's like, I understand. What exactly are you getting at? At which point Larry delivers what is one of the best slides in the history of Kirby.
Yes.
Where he says, I submit that you stole that baseball, stashed it in your unusually large vagina, and walked right on out of here.
I was dying. In my notes, I actually said, is this the funniest line on Kirby yet? I think it is.
Yeah. It's really, really good.
It's very good.
So we fast forward a little bit later in the night, and Larry's having the Davids are having dinner with the Greens, and Larry says, you know what? I've decided I would like to go skiing. Like, I'm in for the skiing trip, and everyone's very excited. Larry says, like, this is a little thing. I also invited the Orthodox Jew. And they're like, Orthodox Jew? What are you talking about? And Jeff's like, oh, you're the guy? He's like, yeah, the guy. They tell him the whole backstory about Richard Lewis and the kidney. And, you know, this would really help out Richard. And Susie's like, are we helping out Richard to get a kidney? Or are we helping you avoid giving a kidney?
Yeah.
And Larry admits it's really about that. But, you know, that's still a pretty good thing to do overall. You know, it's kind of win-win for everybody.
Yeah.
And Susie's like, all right, fine, you know, I don't really like it, but as long as I don't really have to do anything with these people.
Yeah. What do you mean by whatever, these people, like, Susie?
Let them come along. And Larry's like, yeah, about that. I think this is a smart editing decision to, like, not have him tell them and then just, like, cut and, like, we see it live. I thought it was, like, well done. And we're in the cabin, and we see what has happened is that Larry and Susie are now posing as a married Orthodox couple.
Yes.
It's not really ever made clear, I think, who Jeff and Cheryl are. I guess it seems later like she's like
he is a Gentile
or something.
Friend.
Or they're just friends. Okay, fine. Okay, yeah, I guess that works.
By the way, the kind of Jew that Larry's pretending to be, again, probably not the kind of people who have such close Gentile friends that they're, you know, sleeping in the same house together for a trip.
Yeah, who knows? Like the dynamic later makes it seem more like she's the help, because, like, the way he's, like, chewing her out for the
I think it's clearly another couple that they're friends with.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, fine, that makes sense. But, like, the way he talks to her is crazy. I mean, it's not nice even if she was the help.
Yeah. The daughter, anyway, as we said, is wearing a snoo on her head, even though she's married.
Yeah. Doesn't make any sense. Yeah. And they're talking about Larry's telling the story of how he and Susie met back when they were in college. They were at Hillel together. Mm-hmm. He was in a band that used to play Jewish folk songs.
The
and they're like, oh, interesting. What songs?
Yeah.
He's like, oh, well, you know, Gefilte Fish Blues, My Freaking Heart Is Killing Me and Making It Hard to Kvel. Yeah,
and again, these are the names of songs that a Reformed Jew would, like, no Orthodox Jew would ever come up with those song names.
Yeah, and Susie, missing no opportunity to take a dig at Larry, tells them, you know, well, of course, you know, I married him out of pity. Heidemann says, oh, you know, you remind me of my wife, Oliva Shalom,
yes.
Which any Orthodox Jew knows means who has since passed away.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's an endearing term that you say about someone who has deceased.
Yeah.
And Larry says, oh, that's lovely. I would like to meet her sometime.
No, Susie says, how lovely. Larry says, I'd like to meet her. Yeah.
And they're like, he's like, yeah, well, she's dead. So, you know, good luck.
And the daughter is very suspicious.
The daughter, the daughter immediately knows something is up.
Yeah.
He's like, well, you know, enough about me. What do you do, Heidemann? And he tells him about the whole, you know, I work for the kidney consortium. I decide who gets kidneys. And he's like, that's so interesting. My friend Richard Lewis is on the transplant list. He really needs a kidney, but he's at the bottom of the list. And it turns out Heidemann knows exactly who Richard Lewis is. He knows the situation. He's the guy who dresses in black all the time. And he's like, yeah, you know, that's you know, I guess that's a shame that, you know, he's in a bad spot.
Yeah.
Well, it's bedtime, and yeah, I guess you're right. It is there's meant to be a couple because
but it's absolutely Cheryl amazing that Susan and Cheryl agreed to go along with this caper.
Yeah, I mean, right. They've like balked at much less than this.
Especially Cheryl. I feel like having to sleep with in the same room as Jeff.
Yeah, although I guess I would say that there's been no other scheme that I could think of where, like, the upside prize of what they're trying to get is as significant as a kidney.
But, I mean, Richard has a kidney. This is – the upside here is just Larry doesn't want to give up his kidney.
Okay, that's pretty good.
Not for Susie or Cheryl.
Cheryl? You think Cheryl doesn't care for her husband to have both functioning kidneys?
I don't think she cares.
I mean, if she actually cares about him, like, this is very good that he gets out of having to give a kidney.
Is it so bad to give a kidney?
Like, one night sharing a room with Jeff. Yeah, we've talked about this. If you give away a kidney, then you only have one kidney. And if something happens to that kidney, you die.
Yeah.
And it's also, like, it's probably a big, like, surgery to go through. You know, it's not like Larry's a young guy. Like, having the surgery is probably a whole ordeal.
Yeah, it's more than one night, by the way, I assume. Right. Probably a couple months.
Yeah, whatever it is. So having, you know, sharing a room with Jeff where Jeff sleeps on the floor for a night, I think is a small price to pay to get your husband out of having to give away his kidney.
I don't know. I mean, I think that Cheryl wants Larry to give the kidney, right? I mean, we know Susie doesn't want to because Susie said that. Cheryl's never expressed opposition.
I think she wants him to do the right thing and help out his dear friends. But if there was a way for Richard Lewis to get a kidney without Larry having to give his kidney, I think she would reasonably be very in favor of that.
So you consider this caper to be reasonable?
Well, I would say that. It's very deceptive. And, yeah. You know, it's not well thought out. But, you know, I don't think, like, what she is enduring here is, like, so bad that, like, if it results in in Larry – not having to give the kidney, that it will be worth it.
There's no chance my wife would ever go along with this to save my kidney.
Yeah, probably not. Both of them think that they might get a chance to sleep in the bed, but of course not. They're both being sent to the floor. Once Susie falls asleep, Larry tries to sneak in, but of course she immediately wakes up and kicks him right back out.
Yes.
So it's the next morning, and Cheryl has
made
some eggs.
Not to get too inside baseball here, but it wouldn't be uncommon at all for a religious Jewish couple to be having to have separate beds in their bedroom. And so there could have been a circumstance, frankly, where Larry didn't have to sleep on the floor. He could have just went and slept on the couch or something. And then if he would have been asked by Ben or the daughter, why aren't you sleeping with your wife? He just said, oh, you know, there's only one bed in there. But I guess Larry doesn't have that information. So anyway.
Yeah. So Cheryl's making breakfast, and Larry's like, what is this? Is this bacon? You can't make bacon. What are you doing? Are you crazy? which, like, yeah, I mean, like, if you're going to do this, like, there's a lot of stuff that you have to, like, talk through beforehand.
Yeah.
Like, you don't just, like, as you go, do, like, of course, like, they shouldn't make bacon if they're posing as Orthodox Jews. Like, that's the type of thing that even, frankly, like, most Gentiles know that, like,
But it's not even, like, bacon. Like, the level of detail to have a kosher kitchen, like, you know, every single product. Like, they would have been caught the minute that those people walked in the house. They would have seen things in the kitchen well before the bacon, I think.
Yeah, probably. But yeah. Like, if you somehow got it to here, it's like, now – so, like, what did they serve them last night? They made them roast beef? Like, they didn't ask any questions?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's very deceptive, though, that they presumably served non-kosher meat to them.
Yeah.
Not very nice. Heidemann's daughter comes in. She's like, is this plate that you gave me for breakfast, is this the same plate that we used for the roast beef last night? And they're like, yeah. She's like, what do you mean? Where are the milchik plates? Which means dairy. The milchik means dairy. She's like, where's the dairy plates? You know, obviously you have separate plates for meat and dairy since you're Orthodox. Mm. Cheryl's like, oh, I'm so sorry, I made a mistake. She's like, well, we have to bury the plate. And Larry's just like playing along. He's like, oh yeah, of course, we bury the plate. You know, she's like, why do we have to bury the plate? Larry's like, you explain it to her. Hello.
I like what she says. I'm sure you have a whole set of china in your backyard. What? That's not a normal thing.
So this is now another thing that this is completely made up. Nobody does this. This is not a real thing.
Well, hold on a second. That people don't bury their dishes in the yard?
Maybe people do it. It is without basis. It is not a thing in Orthodox law that that a way to purify a plate is to bury it in the dirt.
So, it is a thing.
Okay.
Well, okay.
I don't
So
think so.
I remember as a kid that my mother used to take forks and knives when she was koshering them, and she would bury them, and she would like stick them in the dirt. And then I sort of forgot about that as a kid. And then I saw this episode, 10, 15 years later. And then I'm like, oh yeah, well that's where that's from. And then I asked around, and it's not a thing that like we do, but it is a thing that some people do. It's a thing that
Right,
exists.
so it's a thing that is done,
Yeah.
but I'm fairly certain that it is like a mythical thing that has no basis in like actual Jewish
Well,
law
okay,
or
sure. But
text.
this is what I was talking about before, like the Eitan thing. Like you're creating divisible lines that to anybody outside our community don't exist. Like, oh,
Oh,
there's the
that's fine.
ridiculous things we do because we think we have to do them, and there's the ridiculous things we do that we don't actually have to do. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Sure. I completely agree.
Yeah.
Right. Like when someone's like, no, that's made up, like it's all made up. It's just a matter of when it was
Yeah.
made
But
up.
yeah, but I do, but I know, I have no idea why my mom was sticking shit in the yard because, yeah, as an adult Orthodox Jew, that's not a thing that we
Right,
do.
you take you 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 use either like water or fire to
Yeah.
purify,
I know.
which again, yes, also stupid. That's crazy. Burial can never. How could that's gonna make the plates pure? What are these people doing? Are they out of their minds? Everyone knows you go to a water a place where only rainwater has been collected, and you dip the plate into, and that's how you purify a plate.
Course,
Alternatively, you take a blowtorch and put that on the plate.
Try not to light your
Those
house
are
on
the
fire.
only. Those are the only two ways to purify a plate, not burying it. But yeah, we digress. So she asks Larry's like, well, why don't you're the man of the house, why don't you do it? She's like, well, it's a little early for burying. I don't like to bury before coffee. So he punts it back onto her, and she's like, is that bacon I smell? Because that would be impossible. And Larry says, no, I was a little gassy and I lit a
Yeah,
match.
what does that mean? I have
I
no
don't
idea what that
know.
means.
I circled that. I wrote, I don't know what this means. And like, how is this what you would say? Like, what are you talking about?
Like, yeah, that I have no idea what that means as an explanation. By the way, Cheryl plays this whole scene just so well, I think. She's fantastic.
Bacon doesn't smell like farts.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what
To
that
be honest,
means.
I don't know what bacon smells like. I don't think that the daughter should have known either. But maybe if I smelled it, I would know.
Yeah, it's very smoky smelling.
I don't know, I've never really been around bacon, so.
Anyway, yeah. So we head to our final set piece, which is at the ski lodge itself, and we see, as I mentioned before, the scene of Larry struggling with all the ski gear, trying to get ready to go skiing. He bumps into the Heidemans. Everyone's having a grand old time, and Heidemans like says to him, I've been thinking really hard about it, and I think I'll be able to help you out and move your friend Richard up the list. Larry is so thankful, he can't believe it. He actually then like he actually what he says here is actually like exactly the type of way that Orthodox people speak, where he's like, you're gonna be rewarded for this. I'm telling you, your father, he's going straight to the top on an escalator, straight upstairs. Like that's like imagery that I've heard all the time being used to like heaven and hell, like the escalator and rushing to the top. So Larry's like, oh, why don't we go for one last round on the slopes? And I guess what ends up happening is that Heidemann himself does his own thing, and Larry ends up on the ski lift together with just the daughter Rachel. I don't know why that happened, but that's what
But we
happens.
skipped another misuse of the Jewish term when he tells him that he's going to give him the kidney. He says "Bishah Tovah," which is what you say to a pregnant lady, but not what you say to someone when you tell them that their friend is getting a kidney. Instead of, and by the way, a kidney that is therefore allowing a random stranger to die instead, right? Because by Richard skipping the line, you're killing another
Yes,
person.
but that's what always what's happening though. I mean, there's a limited number of kidneys.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying it's fair, but yeah, that's always what happens when, why is Richard at the bottom and someone else is ahead of him? Who the hell knows how this thing
By the way,
works?
this is the emptiest ski resort I've ever seen. Maybe because it's April.
Well, because it's April,
Yeah.
yeah. They're riding the ski lift together. They're making some small talk. Larry's opining on whistling,
How does this small
drawing
talk
versus.
compare to Larry's with the Playmates?
Oh, this is better than that.
Yeah, okay.
He mentions how, I'm not very good at drawing, but I'm very good at doodling. He says he can win a doodling contest.
By the way, I will point out she's wearing snow pants. When we used to go skiing in like class trips in my elementary school, there was a number of girls who would wear skirts over their snow pants for religious reasons.
Right. Yeah, they make girls do all sorts of
Ridiculous things.
not great things. So the ski lift suddenly comes to a stop. And some time passes. It's been 50 minutes. Like, she's really starting to freak out. Larry's like, obviously this is not great, but like, all right.
No, I mean, you should. Like, it'll stop very frequently for a few seconds at a time. But to be stopped for this long is extremely alarming. And there's no one else on the ski lift at all. Like, all the other chairs are empty because, again, it's April. So they're, like, the only ones there. It's kind of crazy.
Right. So like, an hour has passed, and she's, like, really starting to get nervous because Shkia Sachaba is coming. Uh-huh. And they can't be alone after sundown.
Yeah, again, this is a made up.
I guess. I mean, it comes from like the general concept of, you know, an unmarried woman being together with a man.
Sure.
Alone.
But if you're going to either being on a ski lift is defined as alone or not, I don't think that whether or not the sun has set would have an impact on that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, you might be right. Yeah. I didn't like re-research this, but. Yeah, you could be right.
I guess her implication is that it will be dark and therefore no one can see what they're doing on the ski.
Yeah, I mean, also just like, nighttime.
Again, they heard a funny term and they wanted to use it.
Yeah, I'm looking it up. Let's see if there's anything here. I'm on the,
Alachopedia.
I'm looking at the Wikipedia entry for Yichud.
Yeah. Seeing anything about Shkia Sachaba.
Okay, I think it's not crazy. So it says, a woman being secluded with another man is also justified when people outside can see through the window what is going inside the house.
That's why, like,
some people do think people will leave the door open if they're going to be alone with a woman, because then, hypothetically, somebody could walk in, so you wouldn't, like, start having sex with each other because you'll get caught.
Yeah.
This leniency, however, usually does not apply late at night, as there is little or no chance that people would come in unexpectedly then. So I guess it makes sense in that, like, nobody's going to see what you're doing if
but
it's
dark. But the cutoff,
out.
I don't think – well, yeah, okay. So it's not completely crazy. Just 99%.
It's not completely crazy. Yeah. So we see the sun is beginning to set, and Larry is hungry and remembers that he has the edible underwear. So he starts chomping down. She's not interested, of course, because A, it's probably not kosher, and B, it's edible underwear. So she's probably just turned off by the whole thing.
Why do you think it's not kosher? Maybe there's a symbol on that.
Why do I? Yeah, I'm guessing that, like, the edible underwear that Mr. Jones had is probably not from a kosher sex store. She realizes she only has 2 minutes to go and says, one of us is going to have to jump. And Larry's like, are you out of your minds? I think he literally says, are you fucking nuts?
Yeah. Which is fair.
I mean, this would not be required. Even if, like, you believed that, you know, you're not allowed to be secluded alone, like, you would not be required to die or be seriously injured to avoid that situation, I believe. And Larry's like, all right. He just keeps chopping away on the edible underwear. And he calls up Richard and says, hey, I just want to let you know, the whole kidney thing is probably not going to happen.
Well,
now.
He says that after she jumps.
Yeah, after she jumps.
By the way, before she jumps, she takes her gloves off and throws them down there, which I don't understand that at all. Like, wouldn't you want to keep your gloves on to help cushion the fall on your hands?
I suppose. Although the last thing you want to do in a situation where you're falling is put your hands out, usually, because you, like, break your wrists.
Yeah, probably true. But, yeah, I don't know why she preemptively throws her gloves off. Anyway.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And by the way, I can't find my cell phone.
Yeah.
I think I left it at your house. Like, have you seen it? And Richard's like, no, I haven't seen it. So Larry's like, okay, how about this? I'll call my phone now and let me know if you hear my phone anywhere. And
by the way, he's lost his phone several days before. So even thinking the battery would be on doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. And as he dials, we zoom in on the nurse and see that it is the ring-in is coming from inside the house.
In the house, yes. So basically she found a phone several days ago, decided to store it inside her vagina for days. It's still fully working in there. The battery has not died. It makes no sense whatsoever, but it's still hilarious the first time you see it. So.
I mean, who among us has not walked around with somebody else's cell phone inside one of our bodily orifices?
Yeah, well, I just watched Pulp Fiction with my wife. And, of course, there a timepiece was stored in an anal orifice.
There you go. So people do stuff like this all the time. I don't have any problem with it.
Yeah. By the way, I looked up looked at the actors who play Rachel and Ben. Rachel was played by Iris Barr, an actress and writer known for Curb Your Enthusiasm. So not much of a career there. And Ben Heineman, the actor, was the voice of Earl Sinclair in Dinosaurs. So I don't know. I don't know what that is. Anyway,
Yeah, there's a relatively famous Ben Heineman. He was like a railroad executive, but I don't think it's the same guy. He died 8 years ago.
How do you rate this episode?
I really, really love this episode. Obviously, you know, there's an element of bias. You know, I think we'll both agree that this is just like as this is probably the most like inside Jewish baseball episode of TV, like outside of like literally like Shtisel or, you know, a show that's like overtly about Orthodox people. I can't imagine something be just like being more so that comes to mind. So, you know, there's obviously some element to that, but it's an episode that like I just like was dying from laughing the first time I saw it. And it's like that doesn't it's as you to your point earlier, like I didn't even remember that the whole like small penis, big vagina thing is in the same episode as this. And that is just also such an iconic Curb storyline and imagery that like the combination of the two makes this an all time great for me. So it's an easy 5 pretty goods for me. Pretty, 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 pretty good.
Yep.
5 pretties out of 5.
I'm in the same boat as you, which means that it's the first double 5 star episode we've had since the Survivor last season. Although opening night, our guest, pressured me into going for 5, but I really went back to 4.5 after she left. So 5 across the board. Again, as you said, you know, probably slightly biased because of how inside Jewish baseball it is. But to me, this is the second best episode we've seen yet, behind only The Survivor. I slot it just above The Carpool Lane and just above Crazy Eyes Killa. So just an incredible episode all the way around. So pretty, 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 pretty. Who's the come with guy?
I think the come with guy here should be Larry. He, you know, he goes to a lot of trouble. You know, he's doing schemes with the car. He's, you know, the whole scheme with, you know, posing as the Orthodox person. Like, you know, we could debate about whether he does a really good job, but you know, the fact is that it works. He pulls it off. He's just he's like playing multiple characters in this episode. So I think he's absolutely wonderful here. So I'm gonna give it to him.
Yeah, you love giving it to Larry. So.
Yeah, I give it to him like once per season, I think.
Yeah, second time in the season, but that's okay. I am going to say, really, I mean, it's Cheryl and Susie for going along with the caper, but especially Cheryl. She agrees to go along with this absurd caper that involves, among other things, having to pretend to be married to Jeff, sleeping in the same room as Jeff, a known, you know, lecherous, debaucherous guy. So, you know, Cheryl really goes the extra mile here and takes one for the team. So I'm going to give it to Cheryl.
Yep.
And then and by the way, Cheryl has not been a come with gal since season 2 for either one of us.
So, yeah, she's lost some steam.
Yeah. All right, who is your worst person?
Gotta be the nurse. I think her name is Lisa. Is that her name? Yeah, she immediately blasphemes Jeff for having a small penis when it's obvious that the problem is her unusually large vagina. She steals a baseball. She steals a phone. Who the hell knows what sort of care she's giving Richard? I mean, maybe that's the reason why he's not doing well, because this person, rather than doing her job, is just going around the house stealing from him, and hiding them away in her vagina. So, you know, she's near the top of the list for worst people we've seen so far, I think.
Oh, wow. I didn't even have her. For me, my worst person is Cheryl. She reuses the meat plates. She cooks bacon. Like, how dare she not know all the rules?
She doesn't know what she's doing. How does she know any better?
I'm joking. I mean, Larry's pretty evil here. So is Ben Heineman, by the way.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm really not sure who I'm. You know what? I'm going to give it to Cheryl, though. You know, learn the laws of kosher. And has Cheryl ever been the worst person? Let me see. Oh yeah, Cheryl was the worst person for me in Beloved Aunt, and was the worst person for me in Crazy Eyes Killa. You've never had her as the worst person, so yeah.
Yeah, I mean we often mention her because of the way she like doesn't defend Larry and like is always like quick to like turn on him when he's like didn't really do anything wrong.
Yeah, I'm gonna nominate Cheryl for the third time. So learn the laws of kosher, Cheryl.
I mean, if you want to pull off a heist, do it right.
Yeah, the only celebrity we have in this episode is George Lopez. I think it's time for the postman.
Postman, come here. Tell the neighborhood.
Zach Brooks writes, how quickly would you guys be able to spot fake Orthodox Larry? What's the biggest giveaway?
Yeah, the first time.
Yeah, the first second, as soon as like he's like mumbling the words, and like you're, it's obvious that like he doesn't know.
Even the Keepa, like so, there was a famous story. I went to a school for a year after high school in Israel, and people used to, and in general, people in Israel hitchhike much more than they do in America these days, and they really told us not to hitchhike where we were because it wasn't the safest area necessarily to hitchhike. And there was a famous story a couple years before me. Of an American like student in the yeshiva who had been hit, who had gotten a car, was hitchhiking, and noticed something was askew about the guys who picked him up, who were wearing yarmulkes and ostensibly were, you know, religious Jews. But he noticed that their clips that they used to keep their yarmulkes on their heads were upside down. And from that he realized they were actually not Jewish. They were basically Arab terrorists who were attempting to kidnap him. And so he opened up the car of the movie vehicle and jumped out of it and was injured but escaped. And it was sort of a big story at the time. And anyways, his allegations, the way he found out was from their clips being upside down. So it's really the smallest things that would be very impossible for – you'd have to be like an expert spy to really fit into this community, and Larry David is not that. So there's so many tiny tells, I think. Immediately we'd get it.
Yeah. And he gives it 4.5 pretties out of 5. So okay. Zach's still very high in the episode.
Yeah, great episode.
And our second and last email is from Olin Allen. He says, with all the preview talk on this being a strong Jewish Orthodox episode, you buried the lead on this episode and no doubt buried it up a big vagina.
And buried the dishes in the backyard, of course.
That's right. Oh, true. Once the Mickey Mantle baseball was shown in Richard's room, that is when all my memories flooded back about this episode. Once again, nice mix of shouting matches, Larry being fake to try to impress people, and some largely silent scenes. The husband swapping, enjoying the range of comedy and curb on this revisit a lot. Still, in old cultural references by Richard Lewis is what made me guffaw the most, telling Larry he looks like Andy Williams in a sweater. And Olin gives it 4 pretties out of 5, so he's a tad below the rest of the group. Yeah, of course, the Scottish The Irish Gentile is not as high on this episode as the Jews from America. Yeah. That's fine. I hear that.
Yeah, he just thought the use of Shigezahama was inaccurate, so.
Yeah, exactly. So he gives the come with gal to Cheryl, says, given she seems more prudish and also given the size difference of Jeff versus Larry, going along with sharing a room, if not a bed, with Jeff sneaks her ahead of Susie.
Yeah.
And for the villain of the week, he agrees with me. It's Lisa. Yeah. You can tell your own friends about alleged deficiency in their sexual performers, but don't tell their own friends. Also seems to be smuggling quite a little, smuggling quite a lot in spite.
Yeah. All right. Next week, we have the Korean bookie. Larry's thorough investigation to find the truth behind Jeff's missing dog, Oscar, will lead him to suspect his Korean gambler. We are nearing the end of season 5 here. We had a dynamite episode this week, of course. Looking at the next couple of weeks, not as highly rated, I think, as the last couple of weeks. So this season sort of has reached its peak, I think, in episode 8, excuse me. But we have 2 more episodes to go in this season. And then I'm really excited for season 6, because in season 6 we meet the Blacks. So,
yes.
And we've spent a long time talking about this. But if you didn't build up a big lead in the Come With Guy standings, you're in trouble, because we have a contender coming in who's really going to blow away the crowd, I think. Jeff right now has 7.5 points in the Come With Guy standings.
Yeah, so Leon should take the lead by the end of season 6, is what you're saying.
Something like that, yeah. JB Smoove, I just heard about another podcast this week. What was it? Oh, he was on Conan Needs a Friend. Do you listen to that podcast?
No.
Oh, it's a good podcast, and especially I thought the episode of JB Smoove was.
Pretty, 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 pretty good.